Hi, you're listening to Talking About Organizations, a podcast about management and organization studies, where we read and discuss foundational texts and key ideas that inform the way we think about organized work today. Talking About Organizations is a community resource supported by our listeners. To find out how and learn more about the program, visit our website at www.talkingaboutorganizations.com. We also thank the Management Learning Journal and the European Group for Organizational Studies for their wonderful support. Now on with the show. Greetings and welcome back. Today we conclude episode 93, where we present our professional development workshop on organization and management theory regarding key approaches to the study of work, held at the 2022 annual meeting of the Academy of Management in Seattle, Washington, in the United States. In part three, our distinguished panel of Steve Barley, Gina Dacco, Ingrid Erickson, and Davide Nicolini will address questions in matters of the conceptualization of work, its management, and its relationships to social issues. If you missed parts one or two of the episode, please visit our website, www.talkingaboutorganizations.com.
Okay, so I invite all our speakers to come up here, and we're going to have our discussion. So basically, we have three questions that we have crafted. The question is, while work has become a popular category, it appears as a standing for many things, some of which are far from laboring itself. How do different perspectives that we have just heard about relate to the category of work, and how do they help us understand?
So there is a difference between labor and work in academia. I spent 10 years in the School of Industrial Labor Relations. Most of my colleagues were not interested in what people actually do and how they do it. Right? They were interested in employment relations and pay, the degree to which people changed occupations and so on and so forth. And mostly they were interested in creating a more democratic workplace in the sense of promoting unionization and collective activity on the part of workers. So whether in my mind when I hear labor, that's what I hear. Now, you say far from laboring.
Yes, like concrete.
So laboring is a gerund. Right? And gerunds are great because gerunds always imply some kind of action. So what I have done in my ethnographies anyway, I mean, I've written some stuff on labor too. But in my ethnographies, what I've always tried to do is understand what people do day in and day out. Kind of like Richard Scarry. What do people do all day? Right. You all know that book? If you have kids, you probably know what do people do all day, right? But at any rate, I love going in and figuring out how people do what they do, how they use their technologies, and so on and so forth. So to give you an example of where I think this problem of not studying laboring or working actually falls, there's a lot being written today about how now that we've experienced a couple years of COVID and all of us have gotten good on Zoom, that we're not going to go back to the offices anymore. We're going to work from our dens or our basements or wherever the hell you work from, right? And there's almost no data on what people are actually doing when they're in their basements, right? There's no data on how they feel about being connected to their workers, right? It's all based upon this, not all, but massive amounts of it are based upon looking at the situation and essentially make stuff up. And, as an ethnographer, the place I start with, you just don't make stuff up, right? You go out and you study what people do and you report it. So I think that if you actually went out and you actually studied people who are Zooming, you might find that they're not as unambivalent about this new way of working than some of the academic stuff that's being published on it and certainly the popular stuff that's being published on it.
Can I add something?
Yes.
So as someone who has been interested in place and space and work, I think there's another, it's different than the gerund laboring or working or organizing to give due respect to Wyke there as well. But the work as a place and work as a thing, I noticed in some recent collaborations that the idea of work sometimes gets conflated with the place that work happens. So if you think about it from the way Steve said, it has a whole bunch of, like, what are they doing still? But also if you just conflate it with Upwork or Amazon Mechanical Turk or Uber or whatever, we also make a lot of assumptions about what they're doing is complicit with a platform or is defined by this. And so still, what are they doing? I think the core question is, what is laboring in those various situations? So I've just noticed that work has more baggage in a weird way because it's getting lumped together as kind of a whole bunch of inequities, a whole bunch of design decisions, a whole bunch of practices, good, bad, or otherwise, all under this kind of one word. Mm-hmm. Right? And I do think some of it has this kind of space versus action situation.
I don't have a lot to extend what these guys are talking about, but I can think about, like, when I think about careers and I think about work and how they're tied together, you know, careers, of course, are accumulative, right? They are, you accumulate work over time. You can think of, like, situated work over time, that is your career. In a sense. But at the same time, your career shapes what kinds of work you are able to do as well, because of that accumulative nature. So it's less in the moment and less like sort of, you know, observing what people do and more thinking about how what they've done over their history affects what they are able to do. So every time you do work, all of the previous work you've done is embedded in that, and in a sense, that is your career. So that's the way I see the relationship between the two. What do they help us understand? It helps us understand how we move through the world. It helps us understand how, in a sense, our society is ordered, even just the entire way that we think about, you know, I've been thinking about classics, so going back to Durkheim, like how, you know, labor is divided and how we think about how individuals move through that division of labor over time, I think really speaks to not only the individual's career path, but also how those boundaries between labor, different forms of labor, get shifted over time as well.
Thank you. The classic appeared at Tavistock was aligned with the Chicago School.
Okay.
In the fact that these people were resolutely empirically oriented. So most of the things that we get for granted as theories. So I don't think I've seen the word inductions associated with the Tavistock Institute before, okay? But the reason why I want to show is that most of the theory that we use, so the concept of work system, the work in an open system, the work of group work, okay? These are things that we take for granted. They were invented in that period. They were not invented by some people sitting in a room and coming up. In fact, this morning I was reading an article by Liesl Klein, one of the later people, who was accusing some of the later Tavistock people of being psychologists giving lecture to engineers. He said, no, you have to learn the ropes of the engineers in order to intervene in a system. So although they were not, unlike the Chicago School, they were not using participant observations, okay? They were obsessed with going into the level of detail of analysis of work that will convince the engineer to believe them. Mm-hmm. And then they will go ahead and theorize. And in fact, the reasons why some of you may have not heard about the Tavistock Institute is very often they never theorized. If I tell you the Tavistock Institute has done 3,000 projects, and we heard about 6 or 7, 3,000, okay, on ships, on volcano expeditions, on mills, on foundries, you name it, okay? I was working in the construction for 6 years. So I think the lesson there is that, A, you have to start with the organizing, with the laboring, if you want to theorize. And second, I have to say, okay, is that you have to work whatever you have. If you cannot go in a mine, these people, well, they were cheating because Bamford had been in the mine, okay? So so they were using, he was using it as a sort of like a specialized, how do you say, key informant, okay? So, but if any of you would be interested, by the way, the Tavistock Institute archives are available in London. If any of you, when you retired and you're really passionate, okay, you can go and see, open some of the boxes and see the thousands of pages of notes that people were taking. And I can tell you, they were detailed. So, there you go.
So, thank you. We are going to shift gears a little bit and try to think about our own work as academics, right? And so this question is all about the conditions upon which we produce research on work and the assumptions we bring to that based on our own experiences, right? And I thought it was important to have a question about this because we know from social science that the context in which we do our work and the values we bring has a bearing in what we produce, right? So to say it as a question, I wrote it something like this. Management conversations often focus on work from a manager's perspective, and business schools are often very elite spaces. So how does such context and the background of those in it inform how we examine work today? How does it relate to classic scholarship produced under different conditions and assumptions, since many of these people were not business school? And it's interesting actually to have Ingrid, who is not in a business school, so you know. So, oh yeah, you're not either, Steve, that's true. Yeah. So we have two people from business school and two not in a business school. But I thought it would be interesting to try to think in terms of what we bring when you're trying to understand work.
I think I'll just reiterate one of the points that I said, which is that I don't teach in a business school. Mm-hmm. I teach management in a technical school. Mm-hmm. But I also have a very interesting obligation, I feel like, because the people under my wing are about to go create the systems, right, that are going to reproduce the bias about work or productivity or value or whatever. So I think, just to give that context a little bit, so one of the things I'm quite interested in is what is the work of making those systems, mm-hmm. which is still a continuing conversation from not all the way back to the 30s, 40s, or 50s, but at least to some of the people that were interested in studying in the early classic days of CSCW. And I think you've seen a resurgence of that. A little bit of the Davide and I were both at that AI-related panel yesterday about, you know, what is the data-related work of healthcare? What does it mean to create a model for machine learning? All of this is work, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think it's different than understanding the systems of the day, you know, which look probably like Google Docs right now, right? Mm-hmm. To understand kind of what's under the hood within machine learning, right? Mm-hmm. It reminds me a little bit of what you're saying. You have to understand construction, because I really feel like I have to understand quite a lot about technical practice to be able to understand those systems. But so I think it's a different shift for me about, but in the same vein, it's just mm-hmm. different attention. But I think the other thing that I maybe didn't spend a lot of time on, but I really do, like, I'm really a fan of Suchman and Starr in particular, and Strauss, I think, about, like, work is kind of everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. And so that we have to understand, like, so I'm working with Melissa Masmany and my collaborator on independent workers, right? And so we look about kind of what meta level things, we look at articulation work, we look at things that nobody would necessarily look at within a business school, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how we would inform the business, the managerial, but I think all of workers are doing that now. We mm-hmm. might just have a kind of more privileged view to see some of those things, mm-hmm. right? So it's a little bit the kind of radical empirical, but outside of the organization is also a place of work.
Okay. So allow me to start with an assumption, okay? So, because we don't have time to elaborate. It's one of the things that I've been studying too, that I use in assumptions in a lot of my thinking, is that when you speak and when you teach, you have an ideal public. It's not an assumption, it's just a refrying some stuff from the 1980s, but it doesn't matter. So Ingrid, when Ingrid does things, she has as an ideal public designers. People who do strategy, right? They have top management, okay? The Tavistock Institute, when we're doing these things work, they were not for the workers. They were for the managers. Of which managers? They were from the middle-low managers, the people who are the interface between the social system, the sentient system, and the technology, okay? So the people who were in the mine or just outside that every morning had to deal with the fact that, oh no, they, you know, sort of, they are behind again, okay? 6 hours, the new shift, instead of pushing for loading, they still have to undo the work from yesterday. So what I'm trying to say is that the business school have abandoned middle managers. So the return to work, the practice things, the social material things, is a stealth attempt for the business school to start talking about those middle managers. We have not abandoned, or we have pushed this okay, these things into the area of operation manager. You'll notice that in my presentations, I talk about operation management 3 or 4 times. Okay? The only people who actually speak to real work done are the people in operation managers who are not here because they don't do high theory. Okay, so the response is that, okay, so it is not a case, Professor Barley, at the end, is not in a business school, okay, it's an engineering school, right? The problem is that in most engineering schools, they are not just scientists, okay? So, and the results are that the new AI system are designed by engineers that, God forsakes, looks much worse than the one that my colleagues in 1951 had to deal with.
I had a slide that didn't make the cut, and two of the points on the slide were the confluence of paid and non-paid work roles and the value of studying lower status occupations and communities. These are things that the classics can add to the way we think about careers and employment and work today. Those are things that I feel like we lost as, you know, over time. And I think that part of the reason that we lost it is this increasing specialization of the work that we do, the increasing specialization of research. So when I think about things like the paid and non-paid work roles, where my mind goes today is to like sort of work and family issues, and I bet there are no work and family people in this room because we all split up in ways. We have become very narrow in our research scope. We have had to become very narrow in our research scope for the sakes of our own career advancement. So I think that one of the things that we lose is the ability to think about careers in a very broad way. You know, Steve talked about the Chicago School's ability to look at sort of whole careers, and I think that we miss that because working, you know, the study of work is very important, the work that you actually do, but set in this larger context of the work that you do not only at your desk in the office, but the work you do at home, the work you do with other people, things like that. So I have no real point just bemoaning, I'm just bemoaning a little bit the fact that we have to be quite so narrow.
Okay.
This is a question, this is a topic about which I need to be very careful what I say. I have never worked in the business school. I have actively chosen not to work in the business school. It's not exactly easy to do. That is to find a job. You'll have to convince people that you want to be with them and not with people that could pay you more money. So the first thing you got to decide to do if you don't want to work with the elite is you got to give up cash. It's going to cost you to be, I don't know, pure. But the second thing I guess I want to say is if you want to understand the history of why Tavistock Institute in particular and sociology of work and occupations, or more broadly, what I would call industrial sociology and industrial psychology, which is what the 1950s were and the early 60s were really about. Most organizational theory, the predecessors to organizational theory, not counting scientific management, were rooted in industrial sociology and industrial psychology. And it had many of the characteristics that we've talked about in terms of engaged empiricism in the real world, often for long periods of time. The change takes place in 1967. How can I be so precise? This is the year in which Lawrence and Lorsch publish Organizations and Environment. This is the year that Chick Perot published his paper on technology and the environment. This is the year that Miller publishes his book on the environment and open systems. And this is also the year, I know I'm going to forget one. It's a really famous one too. Oh, Thompson. How could I forget J.D. Yeah. Thompson, right? Thompson publishes Organization and Action. Now, you look at these four works, and there isn't one mention of work in the whole book. There are no people in these books, right? There are organizations and there are environments. And that's it. And organizations are pushed around by their environment or they adapt to their environment or whatever, right? But what they do doesn't really matter too much anymore. I mean, there's kind of maybe nods to it, like, you know, if you do creative work, you're probably not going to be a bureaucracy, right? But that's when studies of work and organizing left our field. I think that it leaves our field woefully incapable of dealing with the kinds of underlying changes that are taking place, not only technologically, but in terms of a systematic destruction of an employment relationship that dominated in the United States from the 1930s into the mid-1960s, which basically said, if you're going to work for us, we're going to do something for you. We now live in an employment world where you can work for us and we're not going to do a thing for you. And the fact that the field that studies organizations has nothing to say, and I don't mean all organizations, mostly business organizations, has nothing to say about what this has done to society is, in my opinion, a travesty and a undermining of where we came from originally.
So that actually is a good segue in our last question, because the last one is about work and social issues, right? And we all know that there is an interest, again, it's another of the catchphrases that exist, but business schools, and not only, even, you know, all sorts of people are interested in talking about societal concerns, right? There is this new shift in news fashion and talking about inequality and climate change and all of that. And obviously, this is not new. Since Durkheim and the social sciences emerged as an effort to understand what was happening, all the social fabric, you know, and the issues that were emerging. But I wanted to, you know, try to ask you to do an exercise and think, regardless of the catchphrases around that, but how studying work maybe can help us understand, you know, all those issues. So I wrote, there is a growing interest in the management field and business school, but also beyond, on social issues. How can different perspectives previously discussed offer to these conversations?
I think that one of the ways that we can think about the work that people do, when people do work in organizations that is part of a job, that is a defined set of tasks that people are supposed to do, those tasks are really colored and conditioned by people's values, the values of the organization, the priorities of the organization. And so to the extent that, you know, social issues become embedded in organizations, it has the opportunity to be embedded in the work that people actually do. When managers think about what choices they make in terms of prioritizing products or in terms of how products are going to be produced, that work that they're doing can be affected by social issues in the way we think about the bigger challenges that we face as societies. So that's one way to think about it. That's one way to think about it.
So I think that there's, in my little world, there's kind of questions of automation and augmentation, I think. I'll just reprise a little bit of a conversation I was part of, and I think we need to be better on what does augmentation mean empirically. I've been talking about this for a while. But also, beyond that, we think of advancements in technology as enabling humans to do the things that only humans are able to do. What does that mean, right? What is it to be human, right? So in that sense, I think social issues around meaning, right? We've talked about that. What is it, the Great Resignation or the pandemic or questions about what does it mean to be with others in productive laboring activities, to do that as atomistically on our own in our basements, right? What about meaning, worth? I think those are really important issues of our time that also relate to questions of climate change or urban design or what have you. And so I think this kind of, we should be able to speak on things like that in OMT. We should be speaking on well-being, you know, things like that that have to do with work and dignity and meaning and et cetera, I think.
Okay, thank you.
So I want to say two very quick things, okay? First thing is that no amount of exhortation, I was looking at the synonyms of exhortation because I'm not an English speaker. One of the sermon, okay? So no amount of sermons by management scholars to managers to be nicer people will change capitalism. Okay. So, the Tavistock Institute has a recipe which maybe is applicable, maybe is not applicable. Probably is not in the curve, okay? The things that I've shown you, all the lists, that I've shown you, that I've seen people, okay? So I share with you the techniques that Tavistock people developed in order to analyze work. Those were intended to be given to the practitioners, who then will have to find the optimal way of organizing their work. So the idea is that his analytical systems go analyze your work, because you have to improve your work, no sermoning that somebody else to do it. So that is a way of thinking of social influence. It's not the only way, okay? And that's why on this table, I think at least three of us are ethnographers, because we know that managers can do much more with our best. When we do good work, the manager learn much more from us, from the first part of the paper, not the crap that we are forced to put in the bathroom, okay, with box and arrows, right? So the first thing. The second thing I want to just to tell you, that's personally for me, this translated in my work on the concept of practice, which is a fancy way of doing exactly the same things everybody else is doing here, okay, but camouflage in a philosophical way. And the reason I explain you this, my colleagues in Lancaster have explained quite clearly that talking about energy saving is one thing good for the politicians to say, but they said energy is consumed by how people live their life. So what they do is that they're interested in how practices consume energy. And they start to say, which are the things that we do in our life consume energy, and what are the things we have to change first in order to do. So they translated this concept that are subject to sermons in things that looks like practices. The same can be said for work. The exhortation need to be changed in terms of work processes, minute things, okay? So, and then that is the level where the changes can do.
I'm going to say something uncharacteristically optimistic. I don't think it's true that business schools have not had some positive impact on some social issues. You have to ask the question, what social issues can business schools reasonably have an impact on? There's room to be made on climate change and so on and so forth, but you're going to have to take out an entire political system built around lobbying to do that. But I wanted to say something more optimistic. What I want to say is, you know, I've lived a while and I've seen things change. And one of the things I've seen change, and you know, and I'll be the first to agree, I'd like to see it go further. It hasn't gone far enough, right? But I give business schools credit for having taken steps to help diversify organizations along gender lines and along racial lines. Now, we can do a hell of a lot better, but we are not where we were when I started business schools in, what year did I start? 1979. When I went to MIT in 1979, we were not where we are now. And so I think part of that, not all of that by any stretch of the imagination, but part of that is because business schools over those periods of time adopted concern with diversity. Now, you know, you can point to plenty of places where this is, you know, there's got to be something like greenwashing in terms of diversity teaching, right? But, you know, they do deserve some credit for having done something. And there's certainly more women sitting in this room today than there would have been sitting in a comparable room when I went to my first Academy of Management in 1980.
Special thanks to our guests, Steve Barley, Gina Dacco, Ingrid Erickson, and Davide Nicolini, for their participation in the Professional Development Workshop. And that concludes the episode for today. Thank you for listening. The views expressed are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect those of their respective organizations or institutions. We hope that you enjoyed the conversation and found it valuable. And if so, please consider subscribing through your favorite podcast service and you won't miss an episode. We also welcome your feedback, so if you liked or didn't like something, or have a correction or suggestion for us, please get in touch via Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, or our website, www.talkingaboutorganizations.com. Again, thank you for listening, and we hope to see you when we present another classic reading on organization theory or management science here on Talking About Organizations.